How do you do San Diego Comic-Con? Let's discuss. Welcome to Princess and Scoundrel, where we take you along our scrappily ever after, from Fantasyland to Tatooine and everything in between. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Steven.
And we're talking about San Diego Comic-Con this week, but there's a lot that goes into this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
First of all, my voice. I don't know where she's gone. I hope she comes back one day.
This is one of the byproducts of the con, I guess. Like, if you're not immune to the crud, this is one of the gifts you come back with.
Yes, and I took a big helping of it back with me. I'm still like trying to get my feet under me, and it's been a week. But so we did a big trip. We went out to San Diego for San Diego Comic-Con, and that's why our schedule's been a little bit different.
But the thing was, is like, we didn't go specifically for San Diego Comic-Con. We kind of threw a party during
right. We went with the intent of throwing a Mos Eisley as one of the after parties for San Diego Comic-Con. And we did a big recap of the actual Mos Eisley and like the events that led up to it on our, like, we did a live stream on it on our YouTube channel. So if you want to check that out, you can. But this was our first time ever attending San Diego Comic-Con also. And so we wanted to talk about it, but we're newbies. Like, this is our first time. The only perspective we have is like this one time that we've been with fresh eyes. And so we thought, let's bring people on that actually know what they're talking about when it comes to San Diego Comic-Con. And so we have very special guests on. They have been, I believe, 16 times. And not only are they just like absolute pros at attending the con, but this year they were actually panelists for the convention itself. And they're also just like wonderful people to talk to. So it is two of the hosts from Heroes of the Halcyon, Martin and Christine. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Great to be here.
Let's talk about just, first of all, getting into the convention itself. How would one go about getting tickets to this?
Well, really, there's kind of a two-step process. Is that around, I'd say, March of every year, there's a general sale for Comic-Con, and you literally just get into an online waiting room, and there's randomization, and you hope and pray to the internet gods that you get picked. There really is an element of randomness there. The good news is that once you go, you get grandfathered into a pre-sale the following year. That happens before the general sale. So really, if you've been this year, you get two chances at tickets for the following year, which really gives you an incredible leg up.
And then what's the, just to kind of put it into perspective of how many people are in attendance at San Diego Comic-Con? I was hearing that somewhere the number is 170,000 people.
Yeah, that's about right. 170,000 people descend on the San Diego Convention Center and down at the gas lamp. There are several hotels around the convention center that host panels and parties and offsites. And it's just, yeah, it's one of the biggest moneymakers for the city. That those 5 days alone make up such a huge percentage of the profits of that city that everybody down there is extremely accommodating to anybody coming, between the hotels and the restaurants and
Yeah, I think Sarah and Mike were talking about it. They were talking with somebody, but that basically 70% of their tourist income is from San Diego Comic-Con, which is wild to think that 5 days equals 70% of their annual income.
Because it's not just the convention center. I mean, it truly takes over this entire district, the Gaslamp District in San Diego. It's a huge amount of space, and it is completely transformed. And as much as we love San Diego Comic-Con, the locals clearly hate it because it's transformed to the whole area for several weeks of prep and a little bit of time afterwards. But once you go, you get hooked.
So there's one thing I remember. Probably, it's probably 4 or 5 years ago. This is a good enough time before, but I had wanted to go to San Diego Comic-Con. And I had no prior knowledge. I didn't know how to do anything. And one of the first things that it tells you to do is to create an account. And, you know, I created the account, and I think it was around the March time, you know, time where you, it reminded me of like Disney, where you're trying to get into like a Oogie Boogie Bash or one of these special events, and you're in this virtual queue. And after that one time that I wasn't able to get in, I was just like, well, you know, kind of screw this. Like, I wasn't able to get in. What would you recommend for someone that, say, isn't able to get in on that first, you know, queue or unable to get in, like get their tickets? Like, if they really want to go, is there some other place that they're able to say, you know, hey, this is where some tickets are or something like that?
The best advice that we could give is go with a group. We actually have assembled over the years a significantly large Comic-Con crew. And that just gives you more chances in the waiting room, because if you get selected and you get to buy tickets from the waiting room, it's the weirdest number. They let you buy 3 badges. What an odd number. Why 3? It just seems incredibly odd. But the more people that you have trying, the better your chances are of someone getting selected. So really the best key you can have is try to find a trusted, and that is the key word there, trusted, group of friends that want to go with you. And it's kind of like the, you know, Star Cruiser Suite Mate Finder was so great. There are boards that of people that kind of want to, you know, group together to do just this for Comic-Con. Are just call us. We'll help.
Well, it ends up being almost like a command center, to where, you know, we've got a big Discord set up for all of us so that we talk throughout the year. We have an Excel spreadsheet that has everybody on it, what they want, you know, all of their sign-ins, their, you know, how are you going to pay, you know, that kind of thing. We've got on the day, once you log in and you're sitting there in the waiting room, like, it's constant chatter of, okay, here's how far I am into the waiting list, and here's how far I am into the waiting list, and okay, you've bought for who, and you've bought for who. And so it's just, I mean, it's kind of like that chaos that we all kind of thrive on, that once we all like, okay, I got tickets, then it's like a celebration. But if we didn't have that practice year after year, and we didn't have this trusted group that we buy with year after year, it would be challenging. It's not impossible, but it would be challenging.
And if, you know, fate is not on your side, as it were, and you just get shut out for tickets, either in the pre-sale or the general, there is one other method that has helped. It actually helped us keep our streak alive. Volunteering is a thing at Comic-Con. I mean, it is a nonprofit organization. It does have, you know, paid employees, but a lot of the people that run, you know, that work at Comic-Con are volunteers. And you can apply to be a volunteer. And if you do so, you know, you have to work certain hours of every day, but you do get badges. And there was one year that Christine and I just couldn't get badges. We just got shut out completely. And if it hadn't been for some really wonderful people in the volunteer department approving our volunteer slot, you know, we would have broken our incredible streak of Comic-Con. So volunteering's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think that was like one of the things that when we, our first celebration, I went as, we had to buy tickets. It was for, you know, but I went through the droid builders,
right?
And it was asking for volunteers. And so they kind of set us up as like exhibitors. So we were able to get in there and experience the showroom floor before, because they knew we were working. And it wasn't bad, where, you know, part of your day, you're hanging out in the droid, you know, I was training and hanging out in the droid room, helping, assisting, asking, answering questions, and then you're free to go. So whatever your time period that you had to work, you worked it. And then, you know, so it's really not a bad gig if you're just, you know, helping you get to go to experience this event.
Well, it was so nice too, because you had exhibitor badges. We were able to get in through like the exhibitor entrance, so we didn't have to wait in the long lines to get in the morning. Which that was just a nice little.
And that's not going to say on every type of situation that is, but I think for our situation, that's what it was, because we were part of that group. But yeah, I mean, I think that's doing the volunteer work too is, you know, you're still going to be there. You know, might as well hang out for a little bit, do some work, and then there you go. You get your badges and stuff. So
yeah, and you're not paying for badges.
Right. Right.
Like, that's a nice little benefit. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So you've secured your badges one way or another. This was the part that was absolutely wild to me, was securing a hotel room. And there's even more lotteries beyond this, but the hotel room. So you guys held our hands very kindly for the Mosh Eisley crew. And then for our friends, Paul and TJ, you sat us down on a Zoom call the night before hotels like went on sale, or you could select what you wanted to, and you can go into the process of this, but it's so involved that it required a pre-meeting to understand how to even get through this, how quickly you needed to be, what all information you needed, everything. So can you walk us through what we have now learned is called Hotel Apocalypse?
Yes. Yes, Hotel Apocalypse. So what they do is they have probably 20 or so mm-hmm. hotels that all surround the, you know, the convention center. They're all put into a pool. They tell you in advance, you know, here's the price for each one, here's the locations and all that kind of stuff. And then they actually give you a practice sheet online so that you know how to select your hotels, what information they're going to want you to put in, because it is lightning fast. This isn't one of those where you go into a waiting room and kind of hang out and whatever. This is like, bam, the hotels are done. And you're like, what just happened?
And you don't even find out immediately what you got.
No, so it's 48 hours mm-hmm. before you find out whether or not you even got a hotel. They allow you to put in, what did they do this year? Is it five hotels? Mm-hmm. They allow you to put in five of your top five hotels. You may not even get one of those top five. They have an opportunity where you can click off and say, okay, if these aren't available, you know, put me in something that's close by. And close by could be, you know, 5-10 miles away. But yeah, it's another one of those chaotic crunch times when you're just like, everybody click the buttons and cross your fingers for 2 days and hope that you get something.
But there's a reason why it's worth it.
Yes.
Location matters yeah. for Comic-Con in a huge way. The further away from the convention center and the gas lamp you get, the further away from the action you are. And it really does heighten the experience to be right in the middle of it, either adjacent to the convention center or somewhere close enough in the gas lamp where, you know, you can actually walk through, because a lot of the nightlife, a lot of the excitement is actually outside the convention center after hours. So having a hotel that's close is super useful. And the Hotel Apocalypse pricing is significantly, significantly lower than the rack rate for these hotels. I mean, if you just go on, you know, hotels.com and try to get a hotel room during San Diego Comic-Con, the pricing is just incredible. So it is worth the time and effort.
And they're not cheap. They're just less expensive. Just to forewarn you. But at a hotel that may cost you literally $500 on any other given day per night, they probably bring it down to $250 or so. I mean, they really do cut the prices for Comic-Con because they know it's going to fill up and they know that you're going to spend additional money just by being there.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So you had this Zoom with us the night before. You're like, here's how you're going to do it. And all of us were like, oh, we're not smart enough for this. Like, they're really scaring us. Like, you have to click and you have to click these things right away. And then you have to submit it. We're like, oh God. So you basically have to learn all. It was like a geography test. You have to learn all of San Diego, where all of the hotels are on the map. And that way, whenever you get the drop downs, you know which ones you want to select, and you have to select like your bed types, if you want two beds or one bed, how many are going to be sleeping in that room? Because we were going for a group of us. So we're trying to figure it all out. And we ended up we didn't get it. None of us in our group got it that first go around. And so then they have this basically like free for all where they find rooms later on and they're like, okay, now here's the dregs. Go grab the dregs. And it worked out because the dregs in our in our instance, was a hotel right next to our Mosh Eisley venue. And we actually had rooms reserved there, but like you said, they were $500 a night. Yeah. And doing it through San Diego's room block, we were able to get them for like $300 a night. So much better.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah,
it still hurts. But
yeah. Yeah. But much better.
Yeah.
It's this terrible choice of, do you go for the stuff that's really close and super awesome, but that's the stuff that goes the fastest, or do you go a little bit further out where it might, you know, you might actually have a better chance at it. And the further out it goes, the better chance you have of getting it, but it's further out. So it's this terrible set of shifting priorities that at the very moment you click, you know, submit, what, where are you spinning the wheel?
Well, I think one of the cool things about it was, and I don't know if this is this year only or if they've done it before, but they had like shuttles. So I'm guessing to hotels that were further out. So even if you weren't like, you probably wouldn't be able to do things as fast, like because you're based, you know, going off that shuttle schedule. But if you're not having to worry about transportation, at least you know that there's a way to get to the con, to your hotel, back and forth, and it's an included, or I'm guessing there was no cost to it. No cost, because
I don't think
it looked like shuttles, you were just letting people hop on. So
yeah,
the shuttle not only goes to several of the Comic-Con, you know, hotels, it actually goes to the Comic-Con Museum. That's, you know, a little bit off site, which is an incredible, you know, way to spend a couple hours before or after the con. But yeah, the Comic-Con shuttles are fantastic. We've got friends that stay at a hotel every single year called Town and Country. That's significantly past the gas lamp. They love it. They love it. And they just take the shuttle in and out. It's free. They like being, you know, away from the hustle and bustle. So it really kind of depends what your priorities are.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I thought. I was like telling Sarah, like, is there any of these we could, because, you know, we're trying to get Ubers and Lyfts. And what we found out is if you walked out far enough, like from the.
To the Manchester Grand.
That was like the point where that's the point that Ubers are willing to come.
Yeah, because they don't have to go right in front of the convention center. So it's just far enough away that they can avoid all that traffic.
Right.
And it was like a straight shot to our hotel. But we made that walk one time from our hotel to the convention center. We're like, nah, we're not doing this again.
It's close enough. It's a close enough walk. But if you're like walking all day.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot.
So yeah, so we learned like just go walk to the Manchester Grand and take a lift to and from there. And then walk the 10 minutes to the convention center. And it wasn't bad.
Yeah. No, it wasn't bad.
And it was like a $7 Uber or something. Like it really was not terrible at all.
See, now, you already learned one of the tricks.
You're already. What is this? Year one.
So one of the other things you were talking about and you kind of mentioned was there was panels at like the hotels. So are those panels San Diego Comic-Con panels or are they panels like put on by other groups that they just know that they're going to be panel, you know, like Comic-Con people here.
No, it's all part of San Diego Comic-Con. They just have that many people and that many panels that they accept that they allow for them to be in. You know, like the hotels that are like right next door to it have always got bigger rooms. So it's one of those where, you know, the convention center itself only has a handful of, you know, like those 500 plus rooms or whatever. And so they're allowed to use like a ballroom or, you know, a ballroom or two at, you know, at one of the neighboring hotels. Plus it's, you know, some of them aren't, it's not always necessarily panels. Like I know they have a big gaming room that they have at, is it the Manchester?
Right next door.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, they have other events that are part of Comic-Con that may not be a panel, but they want a bigger venue than maybe a small spot on the floor. So they end up taking space in one of the hotels.
Just the scale of San Diego Comic-Con just blows me away because we went in one day, maybe it was Saturday. I think it was Saturday. I don't know why we were up so early after Mosh Eisley, but we were in before the floor opened. And so they loop you through and they take you like, basically like they walk you all the way down one end, all the way back so that you can flow into the floor. And not, it's not just like opening the floodgates and all the crowd goes in. So, but we walked past so many like panel rooms and everything, and just seeing the scale of the convention center there compared to, say, going to Celebration or any of the other conventions that we've been to, I was just like, we're still walking and we're still nowhere near this exhibit floor. Like, how are we still, in San Diego? Yeah. Like, we've been walking a long time.
And what's really wild is that huge sea of people that they have to let in. That's only one of two areas that they let you in. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's actually,
really?
Yeah, there's the one over on the east side of the convention center on the top level. That's where that one, and then right on in the sales pavilion up top, that's where they, so there's two sections where you can, and strategically it does matter which one you get in, depending on where you want to start on the floor, which booth are you walking swiftly, not running, or it really does matter as to which entrance you want to go in.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it was, that was intense. So speaking of which, like, which booths do you want to go to? That was another one that was a lottery. So the one that I thought was a lottery that was really funny was parking garages. This is a lottery you put in for, like, a lottery on where to park your car for the weekend. But the other lottery was exclusives. So if you want to see, who was it? UCC, I think Hasbro had Mattel, Funko Pop, all these different booths that have exclusives for San Diego Comic-Con. You could put in for a lottery, and you did that pretty soon before the convention. I think it was like a week before.
Right? Really tight.
I think
this
it was
year.
The Sunday yeah. before.
It was super yeah. close this year.
Yeah, not even a week before. It was just a few days before that you put in for it. And I didn't get anything.
Yeah, I was able to get a Mattel one, but it was like Sunday at 3:00. So I was like, well, if there was anything that was there, it's probably gone. I wasn't really eyeing anything at Mattel anyways, but it was just, so that would be my question is, do you put, cause it's a point system, right? They give you right. like 12 points and you could, do you put all your eggs in one basket or do you try to divvy it up to as many as you can? Or like, what would be your strategy for going to it? If we were going to do this again next year, what would be the strategy to go for?
First and foremost, it depends how big your crew is. If you're just going in a smaller group, prioritize. What's the one thing you really, really, really want? And go for it. I will say that almost every one of these booths, you know, Funko's kind of an exception, but like UCC, Entertainment Earth, a lot of these booths, Mattel even, towards the end of the day, they will open up to anyone, whether they have a lotto pick or not, because they're timed. You know, the lotto picks are, you know, Sunday at this time, you know, Thursday at this time. The trick is one of the first things you want to ask for, depending on, you know, which exclusives you're after, is does the vendor restock every day or do they just sell until they run out? And that makes a big difference because if you have a Sunday badge, there's a lot of vendors that if they just go straight sell through, they might be out of the thing Friday afternoon. A lot of the vendors kind of allocate stock for every day. So it really does matter from vendor to vendor how they do that. But earlier in the day, like Mattel's a great example, is, you know, by 1:00, 2:00 in the afternoon, you'll start seeing things be sold out for the day. And eventually they're going to say sold out for the show. So, you know, picking your lotto times earlier in the day, more people are going for those slots because you have a better shot of getting something. But, you know, that's the more people are going for that spot. So it's a double-edged sword. But myself, pick the exclusives you want and go for it. And I tell folks, don't stress. We've seen people ruin their cons chasing exclusives, and boy, you know, I'm not going to say we don't care about exclusives. I mean, we have literally an entire section of our house that is nothing but in a Comic-Con museum, just dedicated to, you know, we've been to Comic-Con what 19 years now, 16 in a row. We got a whole huge section of our house that's Comic-Con and exclusives. But don't go crazy. Don't ruin your show chasing stuff. Enjoy the floor.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that they have the lottery for certain booths, but there are exclusives all over the floor. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether it's, again, toys or statues or art or books, or, I mean, there's just everything is an exclusive.
Yeah.
So that's again, it's just, there's a lot of homework involved with SDCC. The SDCC blog is amazing for keeping track of as new things are announced. You know, kind of try, oh, okay, I need to make sure that I go to this booth because they have the book that I want to have, you know, or the art piece or the toy or whatever. You have to go in with a plan. I mean, that's the only way it works. And you go in with a plan and know that your plan is probably not going to work out perfectly. it just is what it is.
I would definitely say that was the key, because there was, so the one thing that I had been eyeing was these turtle figures by Loyal Subjects. And that was like the cool figure that I was like, you know what? I wouldn't mind having them if I could get them. And I don't think they were specifically San Diego exclusive. So I was like, if I could get them, they're great. If not, like, it's no skin off my back. Right. The one thing that I was trying to help the group is the Jazzwear exclusives. And that, again, that was where my first glimpse of just the madhouse that San Diego Comic-Con is. I was like, I can't sit through, or like, I can't compete with that. There was just so many people fighting for these exclusives that it wasn't worth the anxiety that I was getting just trying to, like, you know, get in line and figure out where I'm supposed to be. I was like, I don't need it that bad. Like, I will step out of line and just kind of watch the madness.
There wasn't even a line.
Well, not even. Yeah, it was just like, it was a madhouse.
Like, it was like Black Friday. Like, it was scary. Like, yes. I was getting shoved and, like, you and I got separated. And there was probably, I don't know, like 5 or 6 of us that were all trying. And, like, we all instantly got separated. We're getting, like, slammed by people. And I was just like, well, I'm not having a good time. Yeah, so I don't know where my friends are. And, like, finally we found each other. But I was like, this is Sandia. That was our first morning. That was our very first experience on the floor. I was like, if this is San Diego Comic-Con, I don't know if it's for me.
The thing about Jazzwares that's really nice is that they actually are the Star Wars items that I'm sure you're talking about, the Micro Galaxy. They're actual exclusives. You can't get them anywhere else. And unfortunately, very few booths have actual exclusives anymore. Almost everything at Funko, almost everything at Mattel, almost everything at most booths at this point are available online before or after or during the show. There are actually, you know, like Hasbro, they don't even bring product to the show anymore. They hand you a QR code on a slip of paper, and sure, you can pre-order something. You don't get to walk away with it. And then they open it up to everyone 2 days later. So the people that are fighting for this slip of paper, you know what you're fighting for. Almost everything is available before. And that's another tip that I'm going to give folks is I pre-ordered almost everything I wanted. You know, the jumbo Indiana Jones, you know, the jumbo R2-D2. I mean, my gosh, how many things were we able to ordered everything we wanted from Funko online. I mean, you know,
at the con,
at the con or before the con, yeah. I had most of the stuff I wanted pre-ordered a week or two before the con even started. So, you know, convention keeps coming to us every day via UPS, you know, for a week afterwards. So again, just but if something's limited to, you know, 500 or whatever, you know, and you can pre-order it and not stand in a line, do that.
Yeah.
Do that.
No, I think that was a nice thing is, again, I was able to get my turtles, and then I actually found they had another set. It was like a 4-pack of them, and it was like a whole different thing. And that was like a added surprise. I was like, well, these are the ones I wanted, but this is like another cool variant of it. So I was like, I, you know, I'm gonna go ahead and grab it. But it was very non-stressful because the booth was open and, you know, they're like, oh, you know, take your time, whatever you need. Like, it was pleasant. It was so, it was so different than the Jazzwear area. So
yeah, the fever of just hearing the word exclusive puts everybody in that FOMO mentality of like, well, I'd like it, but I can't have it. So now I have to go get it. You know, it's just like,
but one of the most useful tips that only hard, painful experience can give you, or you could listen to us tell you right now, is know how many are available each day and do the math. Like the Jazzwares thing. I mean, we Christina and I were actually able to get the really cool Star Wars Jazzwares thing last year for Dano. And great, we tried again this year. And this year it was completely random. They were just handing out tickets randomly on the floor. You could ruin your entire show. You could blow your entire show searching for these Jazzwares people. And we saw people doing just that. And the sad thing is there's only 500 of them. And, you know, between Wednesday preview night, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that's 100 of them a day. 100 a day.
And you guys know, you walk by that line, there had to have been 300-400 people line.
Those are already the people that have got the tickets. So you the people that were searching past 11 o'clock were just wasting their time. Yeah. There was absolutely mathematically no chance they were going to get that thing. And they just ruined their entire trip chasing this, you know, elusive thing that wasn't going to happen. After a couple of years going to Comic-Con, you do get a good eye, though, for the stuff that's going to retain the value or the stuff that if you wait a month, you're going to get for really cheap. You kind of do get an eye for,
absolutely.
You know, the stuff that, you know, you pay the premium on the floor right now to have it and get it done. But a lot of the stuff, if you look in a month, it's going to be significantly cheaper than the, you know, immediately post-con frenzied pricing.
So right now we're talking about the showroom floor. And this was something that we were, so I think this con, I would say this was like very turtle centric for me. That was like the big theme for this con for me, but we were going to a panel and one of the things I told Sarah, I was like, I don't know if it was like, it's almost like a lost part of the con, or it feels like, because everybody's on the showroom floor, but there's just so many panels and there, you know, you go up to that second floor that, you know, that spill over like to all these different panels. There's just like so much like information that's going on. You guys were invited to be panelists, which is incredible. Like the fact that we're talking to panelists from San Diego Comic-Con is incredible.
And they're our friends.
Yeah.
Like I'm so proud.
But how was that experience of going as an attendee and then now being a panelist?
I remember you two were actually two of the very first people we told that we were going to try to do this the day after the Las Vegas Mosh.
Yeah.
We were just like, you know, we're going to try to do this thing. And it was a really long shot. I'm not going to say that getting a Comic-Con panel accepted is easy. It is not at all. But boy, it's really cool when you
it's kind of surreal because we've spent so much time on the other side of the table watching panels, and then, you know, we get in the room and we're being seated at the table. We're like, this is really weird. Like, I don't know, I'm not sure what's going to happen next, but we got here. We made it.
Yeah. I remember we were driving home from Comic-Con last year. And every year we're driving home and we just talk about the cool stuff we saw and the stuff we thought was really, you know, great and the stuff we thought kind of missed the mark. And we just couldn't believe that Disney didn't have any kind of panel for Star Cruiser last year. It blew our minds, especially after that fantastic floor presence they had at Celebration. I mean, they had that incredible Star Cruiser, you know, display on the floor, and they had absolutely zero presence for Star Cruiser or Galaxy's Edge anywhere at Comic-Con last year. And that just kind of made us scratch our heads. And we were just, I mean, we were only what, 10 episodes into our, you know, Heroes of the Halcyon at that point. So I mean, we were literally, you know, ground floor, but it just kind of stuck in our heads as, you know, someone's got to do it.
So you're talking about 10 episodes. So this had to, like, to put it all into perspective, you guys had to start planning to be that, you know, to do this panel well in enough time. It's not something that they just called you up the week before, like, hey, let's have this. Like, you had to apply for it and go through a process. And
what is that like?
You got to put together a pitch. Yeah. The short version, which is unusual for me, if you want to, you know, throw together a successful Comic-Con pitch, and again, we're only one for one, so that our sample size here is low, but honestly, our strategy, and again, we had the invaluable help of Nick Tierce, who it's very difficult to find someone that's been to more Comic Cons than we are. I mean, this was year 19 for us. He's been what, 22? 22 times. So, and our friend that we do Heroes the Halcyon with Drew, I mean, this was actually his first year at Comic Con. The first time he walked in the building, he walked up and gave a panel. Man,
he just won for one.
Grand slam right there. But between, you know, Nick, Christina, myself, I mean, we got 60 plus years of, you know, Comic Con attending. We just examined religiously all these different panels, descriptions that had happened over the past, you know, five, you know, or more years that were kind of like, and picked the ones that were closest to the ones we did and kind of saw, okay, this is kind of, you know, what's been accepted and what works. Cause Comic-Con has a voice, you know, every convention I believe that we go to regularly, they all have a voice. And you don't want to submit buzzword soup for a pitch, but you do want to kind of speak their language. And it's hard to describe, but Comic-Con, you know, they do have a very kind of specific way of what they like to present and how they like to present it. And I do think that one of the things that helped us was including a bit of Galaxy's Edge just to kind of broaden the topic. Yeah. You know, we did a blush test at the front of the panel, and Christine asked everyone who's been to, you know, Galaxy's Edge. Everybody,
yeah.
You know, who'd been to Star Cruiser. Not nobody, but not everybody. So you got to kind of know where's your audience. But the pitch process was fun to kind of hone that down to the best possible thing we can submit. And I think the pitch we ended up with was a really, really good one. But got to throw a huge shout out to Nick Tierce. He's got know-how that goes way far. Way further out than what we have in so many aspects of theme parks and Imagineering and just Disney history. He was a huge help.
Yeah. And so what was the panel actually about? Because if people, you have the full panel up now, I think, on your YouTube.
We've got the podcast episode. It was just put up yesterday. The video is actually going to go up tomorrow on our YouTube channel. But the actual title, you know, Star Wars Fandom in the Immersive Frontier, Galaxy's Edge, Galactic Star Cruiser, and Beyond.
I love it. I love it. We will link to that in the description so that people can go check out the full panel as well, because we had to miss it. It was like right before doors were opening at Mosh Eisley.
I was like, that's
the one thing I wanted to come do. That was my exclusive.
Well, and on that, so the interesting thing that we kind of learned from this was the rooms don't get emptied out from the last panel, right? So that was interesting, because when we went to a panel, we were, I think, 45, 30 minutes before it opened, and there was a line. So we're like, okay, you know, this is what we thought they would start letting in.
But not a long line.
It wasn't long.
We were maybe 30 or 40 people deep in the line.
And it started, or it was like the time to start, and I was like, are they not letting people in? Like, what's going on? And there was kind of like at the end of one, there was like a group of people that, like, we moved forward a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of weird. We're like, what's going on? What's going on? And then it got to a point where they separated Sarah and me. And we were like, well, no, we're together. Like, oh, the seats are not together. We're like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And then we found out, it was like, oh, people, they'll just squat. They'll just squat on the seats. So if there's like a panel there that they're wanting to go to later in the day, they're just going to hang out until they get to that panel so they have a good seat or whatever. So I thought that was like crazy interesting. It was like, some people may just sit in a panel room just to get to their panel.
That happens. That's actually a full strategy for the super high profile panels, which of course ours did not. We're not the Marvel Cinematic Universe giving a pan, but like the Hall H stuff, people will go into Hall H for the first panel just so that they've got a seat for something at 3 p.m. And they just wait it out. It sounds crazy, but that is the only surefire way. I mean, if you want to get into like the Hasbro panel, which was in the same room that we were in. You know, I guarantee you're not rolling into that one, you know, right when they start. You got to kind of get there before the panel before that. So that strategy makes some people mad, but I get it. Yeah. I get it.
I mean, the good news is that we've done that, and 9 times out of 10, the panel that we sit in to get to the panel we want to get to is normally a pretty interesting panel. So it's not like you're just sitting there like, oh my goodness, please get to my panel. It normally ends up being something that's interesting in one way or another.
And we never would have sat. You
know, and we never would have gone. And
so yeah, we found some incredible hidden gems in the schedule, that just these fun discoveries that we now absolutely love that we just chanced on because we were waiting for the one after it.
Well, and the one thing that Comic-Con missed this year because of the strike is Hall H and Ballroom 20, which is normally where they have all of the upcoming movies, upcoming TV shows. Ballroom 20 holds, I think, 4,000 people, and Hall H holds 6,500 people. And so that's an additional, you know, 10,000 people that were on the floor every day.
Plus the next day line.
And, you know, and Hall H is one that you line up at noon the day before the panel. You wait in line until normally about 8 o'clock at night to where they hand out the wristbands for you to come back at 6 o'clock in the morning to get in line to get into the room.
Which is better. I mean, hey, back in the day, we had to actually camp out all night. Yeah. So the whole next day line and the wristbands is fantastic. Nice. As far as we're concerned, that's great.
So see, that's where I was getting to. It was like all the years before they've had these Hall H and the what was it, the room 20 or ballroom 20. Ballroom 20. Mm-hmm. How big of a difference was it not having that this year?
I mean, really the biggest difference is the amount of people on the floor. Mm-hmm. I mean, there have been plenty of panels that we've gone to in Hall H and Ballroom 20, but I can't say that we necessarily missed that this year. It was just a matter of the amount of people that were on the floor because there was so little in those rooms.
It felt like a full and complete convention this year.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not going to downplay the incredibleness of Hall H. I mean, we were there, you know, when Lucasfilm did the title reveal for Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. And I got to tell you, to be in the room when they announced the title for a new Star Wars chapter is electrifying. And then, of course, we walked out of the room and they were selling the shirts like right there. They kept it secret. They kept it secret until that moment. And that was, you know, we were there for that incredible Star Wars concert that they did for Force Awakens. I mean, they did an incredible Hall H panel, handed everyone a lanyard and a badge and walked them right behind the convention center.
6,500 people.
And did a full-blown John Williams concert, handed lightsabers to everyone. We had a lightsaber rave to John Williams. Those are moments you're never going to forget. So, I mean, I'm not going to pretend Hall H isn't a thing. It is a thing. But this year, it was incredible. I didn't personally feel like it was an incomplete convention.
No.
Hopefully that it gets, you know, it gets situated where it could come back to its former glory and, you know, we can experience a Hall H.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, there were no celebrities there. There weren't, like, those big after parties and that sort of stuff. And I think that's what we heard was also missing, was just some of those elements. I mean, we had a great time.
Yeah.
Right.
We had too great of a time. Listen to me.
You even brought some back with you. That's great.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'd be curious to see what it looks like next year. But if this is what Comic-Con is like, I loved it. I fell in love with it.
I would definitely recommend anyone, like, if you're interested in any kind of con, this is definitely like the most con that you would ever experience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, coming from, you know, doing the smaller ones, doing the more, you know, like the celebration type cons, like this is like a tenfold compared to those other ones.
Yep. Well, I would definitely recommend going to a con local to you. And if you enjoy it and you don't get frustrated with the crowds or the lines or any of that kind of stuff, awesome. Then SDCC is your next step.
And yep. keep watch that unofficial blog. Literally, it's just the San Diego Comic-Con unofficial blog, SDCC blog, is actually the most useful source of information, yeah. even more so, I would argue, than the official app. I mean, that tells you where everything is. They gave you, Mosh Eisley, a fantastic article and write-up. They gave our panel a write-up. I think they're just invaluable with getting the news out to what's happening.
Yeah, no, they're absolutely great to us. I relied on them a lot for information because...
It just felt like it was more current information. Like mm-hmm. whenever something absolutely. Was changing, it was like, okay, this is what's going on. And you would check that before you would check the official app.
Yeah.
So, which is weird, but yeah.
So strange. All right. Well, I think that's it. Did you have anything else you wanted to ask?
No, I think that was it.
All right. Well, then thank you guys so much. Martin, Christine, please tell people where they can find you on the internet.
You can always find us at Heroes of the Halcyon on Instagram, on Halcyon_Heroes on Twitter. We're now on Threads at Heroes of the Halcyon. You can email us at heroesofthehalcyon@gmail.com. And YouTube at Heroes of the Halcyon.
And you've got a personal Instagram as well.
Oh, yes. You can always find me at Captain Malie Fassant on Instagram.
And Sakul Film on Instagram.
I love your new profile picture on Sakul Film, by the way. All right. Thank you guys so much for joining us. And thank you for hanging out with us for this episode. We will see you on the next one.